This is Baby Talk Podcast with Penny Johnston.
Did you know 1 in 10 babies in Australia are born before term and they face an unfair battle for life? Can you even imagine the guilt you'd face wondering if somehow you could have prevented this from happening? This did happen to Melinda Cruz. She's going to tell the story of the birth of her 3 sons, all born preterm. And when you hear her, it could have happened yesterday.
A lot of nights where you're just lying there and just praying, and I remember talking to him saying, hang on, you know, hang on, baby, stay with mummy longer.
I was so surprised that her first preterm birth took place over 16 years ago, because for some families, having a premature baby is such a traumatic event. It's so completely different to the birth plan that anyone would ever expect. So let's hear how Melinda turned her crisis into an incredible positive. A peer-to-peer counselling service for families in hospital, access to ongoing help for parents and their little preterm babies, changing the way we help families through this difficult start to life.
Our units do such a wonderful job medically and physically. Like, our babies in Australia have such great outcomes. But he said if we don't look after the emotional stability of the family that we're sending them home to, we're only doing half our job.
Melinda Cruz is founder and board director of the Miracle Babies Foundation. Tell me about the birth of your first child.
I was actually told when I was 18 that I might have complications having babies, whether it be falling pregnant, holding on to them, or actually having them early. So I kind of had a little bit of an inkling that it might be a little bit of a difficult journey for us. But when it came to wanting to have kids, I fell pregnant straight away. I was really lucky, did not lose him, like hung on to him. So I kind of had a bit of a false security, I guess, that everything was going well. And then when I got to about 29 weeks, I realized that what I thought was Braxton Hicks was actually contractions. And they weren't very strong, but they were there. And I was put into hospital and I was there for 5 weeks while we tried to hold him to stay a little bit longer. And that's as far as I could get. And I ended up delivering him at 34 weeks.
Wow. So 5 weeks in hospital would have been pretty tense for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And the whole time having contractions, holding them off. But yeah, they were there. And it's quite an emotional time because you don't know what's going on. And I remember, you know, I had one of those pregnancies where I wouldn't even take a Strepsil. Like, I would have nothing. And then having to go into hospital and, you know, requiring medication to try and stop it and having steroid injections for his lungs and, you know, having to say yes and being thrown into a world where I had no control. Very emotional.
Most women under those circumstances, you couldn't help but feel like somehow it was your fault.
Yeah, I mean, particularly because it was my condition. So I actually have a bicornuate uterus. So instead of it being, say, like a balloon shape, it's like a love heart shape. You know, some people go, oh, that's really sweet, but it's not, because it just means that the baby's only growing half in one side and the other side kind of collapses on itself and just doesn't give the babies enough room. So, yeah, a lot of nights where you're just lying there and just praying. And I remember talking to him saying, hang on, you know, hang on, baby, stay with mummy longer. And yeah, definitely all that desperation.
He was the first of 3 that did not hang around inside for very long. Yep. Going back for the second time, what was it like realising that you were going to spend another few weeks in the neonatal intensive care unit?
I think what happened the second time was that, I felt a little bit confident in that, you know, my uterus had gotten this far and we'd gotten a pregnancy to, you know, 34 weeks, that everything would be okay and I would just have to get to that 29-week mark and then go on bed rest and get him as far as we could. And it just didn't happen that way. I remember I was about 26 weeks or just over and just having this intense burning pain and thinking something's not right. And there was no contractions, there was no other pain, just a low set burning pain. And I was actually out with my mum and Elijah at the time, and I said, I need to go. And she said, do you want to go home first? I said, no, straight to the hospital. I just, you know, a mother's instinct, you just know. And I remember going in there and they weren't too sure because I wasn't having any contractions, but what was happening was that my cervix was dilating. Oh. And within 4 days it was fully dilated and this baby was coming, and we just had, it was like no warning. So I ended up delivering him just over 27 weeks, which was a completely different experience to the first time.
What difference does just the few weeks make?
So with Elijah, he came out and he was breathing. He needed support. Like, he was in hospital for 2 weeks. I think the biggest thing for him at 34 weeks was that he needed basically just to mature, to grow. And one of the things when they're at that week is that they haven't learnt to suck yet. So feeding was a major issue for him. So he was being tube fed until we were able to help him learn until he matured enough to be able to start sucking. For Dylan, which was my second, completely different. So he was resuscitated when he was born. He spent 16 days on life support and then 9 weeks in hospital. So the earlier they are, every week, every day, absolutely counts and makes a difference. So the longer that they can stay in is so much better for the baby, if, you know, if that's possible. So it was just a really different experience for him. As soon as he was delivered, rather than hearing a baby cry, the room was completely silent. He wasn't in the room for very long. He was taken away from me. Sorry, I might get upset.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, that's okay. but it's important that people realise this is what happens, you know. It can happen behind closed doors, but this is what families go through. So he was resuscitated and then, you know, obviously like taken away to the intensive care unit where they worked on him and put lines in him and got him stable. That was all, you know, things that still in delivery when this was happening. I think one of the hardest things, and a lot of people when this happens, they focus on the mum, but his dad was there the whole time and he was the one. Our deal was if we get separated, you go with the baby, don't worry about me. So he watched all that happen, you know, and that's had a big impact on him as well.
The other thing I imagine that would be so difficult is that all the things that a mother does to comfort a baby, to feed the baby, to hold the baby, that's denied you for the first weeks too, isn't it?
Yeah, that's all out the window. Like, you really have to kind of just step back, mourn the loss that you don't get to play that part. You know, it's wonderful and it's encouraging. Like, our hospital's a great place so that, you know, parents can try and be involved as much as they can. One of the biggest things that parents and mums can do is just to hold their baby. There's a lot of research around what they call kangaroo care, which is skin care.
Yeah.
And placing, you know, the baby on your chest. And it's such a wonderful time to be able to bond for both parents to do that. But there's actually health benefits for the baby. So it actually relaxes them. It regulates their heart rate, their breathing, their temperature. Babies who are held a lot of time while they're in care have less likely chances of infection. It reduces their hospital stay, so they go home earlier. You know, as much as you can't play the part that you really want to play, you still have a really important role.
What was it like for you, a slightly more experienced parent, to see, you know, when a new baby is brought in and their shell-shocked parents arrive? What's it like welcoming them into that environment?
Yeah, I think as much as I had gone through it before, every experience was so different. And I remember with Elijah, like, we were in a different level of care because he was born at 34 weeks. And it was kind of like that top level care. You're almost scared to even look up that way. And I remember meeting a mum, or seeing a mum back when I had had him, that her baby was born at 28 weeks, and just my heart breaking for her, and seeing her cry all the time and what she was going through. And then when we went through it with Dylan and I was up there, I remember saying to someone, the way that I looked up here is the way that people are looking at us. But for me, it was a different experience. And I remember my mum once saying, when I got home and I broke down and I had cried, and she said, but you knew you're going to have to leave him in the hospital. You knew, cause this was when I was discharged that time. And I think the thing was, I knew that, but the fact that I did it again, this has happened to me twice, I'm not going to get that experience. But for other parents, you know, I think you form this really special bond with them. We're all going through, our experiences might be a little bit different, but we're all going through it. We all have this time where we sit there and we just wonder, and we're filled with love and elation because you've got this baby. But at the same time, you know, you've got this fear and this worry, this guilt, and you just have to sit there with hope. For me, there was a lot of comfort from other parents, and I hope that even through my journey, you know, that I was able to offer that to them as well.
You've got three boys. Did the other one stay in longer?
Yeah, so he was our surprise. There was a part of me that was just terrified to what was going to happen again. But, you know, obviously a new baby in the world, like I love my kids, have that excitement. And that's really hard too, like that you have a pregnancy where you're kind of constantly on tender hooks. And this time around, the doctors decided to try a different procedure. And they actually, at 12 weeks pregnant, I went into hospital and I had my cervix stitch closed. So that was something new that they wanted to try. And they had said to me, you know, if your waters break or you start bleeding, then the stitch comes out. But if that doesn't happen, we'll try and get in as far as we can. And with him, my actual contraction started at 23 weeks. So I was put back in hospital, put back on bed rest. But thank God that for me, the stitch held, and I held him for 14 weeks like that. So I had him at almost 37 weeks, which was a much different experience, let me tell you. I had the opportunity of having that baby put on my chest to hold him for a few moments. Unfortunately, I had complications. My placenta wouldn't come out. Oh. So I then had to go to surgery, and I remember asking them if I could take him with me. And I looked at one of the nurses. I said, this is the first time my baby can stay with me and I'm the one that has to go. You know, I was gone for a couple of hours and then obviously back with him. And yeah, it was a much different experience. He developed on day 3 really severe jaundice. We'd actually taken him home and he just really wasn't well. So we were back in the hospital and back in the NICU, and you know, we were there for a couple of days. And I think if he'd been my first baby going through that experience, that would have been a really hard time for us. But, you know, being third and knowing the smells and the sounds and some of the stuff was still there, and just the process, it was a different experience for us. I was blessed with a nice journey in the end. My babies are grown up now, so I've got a 15, Elijah's 15, Dylan's about to turn 14, and Jasper's turned 12. So,
goodness.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing how time goes. So I've got photos of Dylan, and I mean, you know, the mobile phones got really what they used to call bricks and then got small and kind of got big again. But, you know, we've got photos of him next to a Nokia phone at the time, and it's basically the length of his body. Like, it was just crazy. You could put your two hands together and hold his entire torso, and he, you know, his legs and arms would just kind of fall across the sides.
Wow.
Yeah, he was a little baby. He was 1.065 kilos, so just reached a kilo. And for a 27-weeker, they were telling me that's quite big. And, you know, knowing the stats now, a 27-weeker is about 700 to 800 grams. So by their standards, he was a big baby, even though he wasn't.
What you've done out of all this tension and heartbreak is to do something to help other parents in the same situation. So tell us about Miracle Babies and what it does.
I mean, I think the initial thought coming out of hospital, particularly with Dylan, so we were there for 9 weeks and I brought him home, so 35 weeks. And I remember once sitting in bed with him and he was kind of in my lap and looking at him and just being in awe, thinking, you should still be inside me for another 5 weeks. And you're here, you're home. But for me, it was like, you know, what now? And when babies are born that early, you know, you get all the information and all the statistics in terms of what kind of struggles that they may have. And we still didn't know at that stage what our long-term outcomes were going to be with him. The hospital where he was born at had a discharge program for babies that were born under 29 weeks. And that was a really big saving grace for me, because I was able to go back to the hospital once a month and have contact with the staff. So the allied health team, which was the physio, speech therapist, lactation consultant, family support nurse, social worker, plus a doctor. Plus there were other families. So this kind of became like our play group, I guess, because when they're born so early, you don't want them to have a lot of contact in the community, because if they get an infection, their immune system is still so immature. There's a high percentage of babies that are born premature that end up back in hospital in the first 2 years of their life due to infection. So as a mum, you're kind of really protective about this baby. So I was part of that program for the first 12 months. And then once that finished, you get discharged from that. And I remember saying, you know, he's not walking, he's not talking, we're not on full solids yet. Like, where do I go now? And there was just nothing. So I, at the time, you know, Facebook didn't even exist at the time. So I was doing Google searches and I found an organization in the UK and one in the US that were for families of premature babies. But there was nothing in Australia. And let me tell you, had there been, I would have just linked into that. Like, my goal wasn't to go and start one. I would have just been part of one if one existed. So I gathered some of the information. I went back to the hospital with the head of the unit and just said, you know, here's my idea. And I think the basis was like a support group for families. Like, where do we go? Who do we stay in contact with after we get discharged? Who do we ask questions? There was just so much. I mean, I remember when he was 2 weeks, this was Dylan, 2 weeks off being discharged, and we were talking about his lungs. And the doctor was trying to explain to me what kind of issues that we would have. And I said to him, is there another parent I can talk to? Like, can I speak to someone who's got a 27-weeker who's now 2 or 5 or at school, so we can get some kind of impression, some kind of idea of what we're in for? And there was just no way to do that at the time.
Yeah. Having the chance to talk to someone else that's been through it is just so incredibly helpful, isn't it?
I think people undervalue peer-to-peer support. It really does. I mean, my background's Italian. I've got a huge family around me, a lot of people caring for me, but I was the first person to have a premature baby and no one got what I was going through. So I just really needed to be linked to other people that just got it. And talking to one of the doctors at the time, he said, you know, our units do such a wonderful job medically and physically. Like, our babies in Australia have such great outcomes. But he said, if we don't look after the emotional stability of the family that we're sending them home to, we're only doing half our job. And this is really where Miracle Babies has been able to step in and help fill that gap and work alongside the health professionals to make that difference. So, you know, 13 years into what we've been doing, some of the biggest, I guess, ways that we can support parents is through the parent support program. And that includes a 24-hour family line, in-hospital parent support. So exactly what I was asking, where, you know, past parents or parents who have gone through the experience now volunteer their time to come back and support current parents in the units. And then the discharge program that I was part of, which was only available for 12 months and only if your babies were born under 29 weeks. We've been able to extend that. It doesn't matter what week or weight your baby was born or how long they spent in hospital. And instead of being up until a year old, they can now come until they're 6 years old and basically ready for school. So we've really been able to extend that. Plus, you know, with the way social media has gone, we've built a really, well, probably the largest community in Australia for neonatal parents, and have a whole range of resources that we can help them through the journey.
The other thing that is almost not talked about is that while you're hoping and praying for this little baby to survive, they're going to make it through potentially with some big complications too.
I think people don't realise too, when, especially when a lot of stories about premature babies are always, you know, can often be portrayed as the big miracle stories, the big success stories. But, you know, in Australia, up to 1,000 babies lose their fight for life every year, which that's incredibly heartbreaking, and a lot of families that we need to work with. And then on top of that, there's outcomes. So these babies have a high risk of major disability like cerebral palsy. They can have problems with their eyesight, with hearing, with their lungs, with digestive problems, social behaviours. Like, there's just a whole range of things. Gross motor skills, fine motor skills, they just really need a lot of support, and so do the families to work out what's going on. I think at the time, you know, going back 15 years, there wasn't a lot of research to work out the long-term outcome. But as these babies are getting older, you know, we can start to see trends or patterns and see what is actually going on, what has happened as a result of their prematurity, and be able to develop ways to support that now, which is, it's getting better and better all the time, which warms my heart. I think it's amazing.
Even little things like babies having trouble with eating because they've had so many tubes down their throats.
Yeah.
You couldn't blame a parent for finding it really hard to bond with a baby that they haven't been able to hold in any sort of robust way for quite a few weeks too.
Yeah, and I read those stories all the time and they break my heart, because, you know, you speak to mums who, when they first find out they're pregnant, they're so excited to be a mother. And even when you have a baby full term, you know, your parents are at risk, or mums are at risk of having postnatal depression. And in this group of mums that have had a sick or premature baby, that risk increases. And Yeah, it is. You know, there's almost, even though you have your baby, there's almost a process of having to mourn what you think it was going to be like. So you really have to protect them, and you really have to help support them and acknowledge the fact that even though the baby's wanted, they do struggle. They do have a hard time processing their own emotions, accepting their own guilt, and then trying to bond with a baby that you weren't able to be there for in those first few weeks, days, months, whatever it might be.
So one of the things that you're doing for May is to make people aware of the difficulties faced by the parents of premature babies and the premature babies themselves, and to talk about how the Miracle Babies Foundation supports families. What are you doing to make everybody aware of it?
So every May we try and, I guess, kind of shed some light and open the doors. Everything that happens is an intensive care unit, so they're kind of behind those locked doors. But to be able to open that up and see, you know, this is what families go through. And I think the thing that's good for us with awareness is to realise it doesn't just happen to mum and dad, it happens to the entire family. So siblings are affected, aunts, uncles and grandparents. You know, they have the same dream. And I've watched grandparents who not only have to see their baby struggle or their grandchild struggle, but also their own child. So if they're the grandparent or the mum of the mum that's delivered and she's not well. And I think that's what we want to try and do, is raise the awareness that this happens and affects everybody involved. So some of the ways that we would love for people to take part is to become a regular giver. We get no government funding for the work that we do. I don't think people realise how many babies are born premature or sick. In Australia, it's 48,000 babies every year require support. So it's a huge amount of families that we want to make ourselves available to, and we can only do that if the community gets behind us. So if they jump online, which is miraclebabies.org.au, they can have a look at whole different ways that they can support us, whether it be to make a donation, which are all tax deductible, to become a regular giver, or to hold an event in their community or workplace or school, and have a look at all the other ways that they can be a part of the work that we do and part of our journey.
Melinda Cruz, founder and board director of the Miracle Babies Foundation. And May is their big fundraising month. If there's any chance you can make a donation, you can head over to their website, and there's a date in May where donations will be matched.
ABC Baby Talk is a weekly podcast on ABC Digital Radio, wherever you get your podcasts, and on the ABC Listen app.
Baby Talk, if you've just found us, is not just a digital radio program, but also a weekly podcast about all things to do with babies and their parents. Baby Talk is online on the ABC website.
Hello, this is Baby Talk.
Please share this podcast, because sharing is nice.
Baby Talk, one word, should definitely find us, and you can access our great archive of podcasts about all sorts of topics related to birth and those early years of parenting. I'm Penny Johnston. I'll see you next time on Baby Talk.
ABC Baby Talk is a weekly podcast on ABC Digital Radio, wherever you get your podcasts, and on the ABC Listen app. Like us on Facebook to find out as soon as a new episode is ready. Just search for ABC Baby Talk.